WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. After the defendant's panic attacks, a judge delays trial for the former Culpeper County Sheriff in an alleged badges for bribes scheme. JMU records the voices of veterans, and as the dust settles after last week's election, Jeff Shapiro surveys Virginia politics and state government. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, November 15th. The trial of former Culpeper County Sheriff Scott Jenkins has been delayed yet again after Jenkins suffered multiple panic attacks before his scheduled appearance in federal court. The Daily Progress reports that Judge Robert Ballew Thursday granted a nearly month-long continuance. Jenkins is accused in a federal indictment of accepting more than $70,000 in bribes from people he allegedly made auxiliary deputies, claiming that their badges would allow them to carry concealed weapons in all 50 states. Jenkins has pleaded not guilty to the charges. Over the past year or so, staff at James Madison University have interviewed more than 20 veterans, with some of the interviews lasting 5 hours. David Dillard, head of the school's history department, says he often hears a common refrain.
All I did was my job. I did what I needed to do. I just did my job. People, I think, say that a lot because they don't realize how special and how important what they did was.
Eventually, all of the interviews will be archived through the Library of Congress. Those interested in participating in the project can email veteranshistory@jmu.edu. Full disclosure, WMRA's operating license is held by JMU's Board of Visitors. A local history organization will stage a play this weekend to raise funds for preservation. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
Members of the Stanton Augusta County African American Research Society were busy running lines and arranging props when I stopped by their rehearsal this week. This Sunday, the 17th, they'll perform Voices of Our Past about the Fairview Cemetery, where many historic figures of the city's Black community are interred. On the property sits the Shea House, which was built in
1871, so that's a jewel.
Susie King is the board president of the Research Society and an actress in the play. The story takes place at the turn of the 20th century, when the community filed a lawsuit against the cemetery caretaker.
It's a conversation about how the trial came about and what the big gossip was in Stanton about the Shea House. And so this is a field people in on the real story.
The play was written over a decade ago by local genealogist and author Leighton Bechtel. This will be its second ever presentation.
We're going to dress up in the early 1900 clothes. I wear the long dress and my hat has a lot of feathers in the front. It's white. And the women are going to wear the minks and the stylish clothes because they were sophisticated people.
The Research Society is raising $200,000 to renovate the Shea House, which needs roof repairs, plumbing, electrical work, and more. The group has money to repaint the exterior and hopes the play will provide the funds for prerequisite repairs to the wooden siding. The performance is at 2 p.m. on Sunday at the Augusta Street United Methodist Church. The suggested donation for attendees is $20. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
Learn more about the story of the Shea House at WMRA.org or on the app. The Brown v. Board of Education Scholarship has been around for about two decades. It was recently expanded to include the descendants of Virginians denied an education during massive resistance. But the program excludes people who live out of state and those attending out-of-state schools. Virginia lawmakers are looking to change that. Megan Pauley with VPM News reports.
Because Marcia Walker's daughter is attending college in Alabama, she's ineligible for the Brown v. Board scholarship. When Marcia told her dad that, the news hurt him. He was unable to attend school from 1959 to 1964 when officials closed Prince Edward County schools.
His exact words were, "Marcia, they are doing exactly to my granddaughter what was done to me. They are making a choice of where she can attend school and in order for them to fund it, and it's not right and it's not fair."
Walker's testimony before the scholarships committee meeting last week led lawmakers to express support for the change, which would also require a legislative update. While the committee could recommend legislation be addressed during the General Assembly session in January, Chair Angela Williams-Graves says it's unlikely to be taken up until the following year.
Megan Pauley reporting. Governor Glenn Youngkin held a press conference to update the state on its ongoing response to Hurricane Helene. Virginia Public Radio's Brad Kuttner has more from Richmond.
Over $10 million has been distributed to Virginians impacted by Hurricane Helene. That's according to Governor Glenn Youngkin Thursday. But he said there's still plenty of funds to go around. People just need to check their mail.
After December 2nd, you will not be able to register for individual assistance. And so that's why we're getting the word out to everybody. Please, if you have had any kind of loss and you're in an individual assistant designated area, please go and make sure you file your registration and get the support that you deserve.
Youngkin said one of the issues with assistance has been people not responding to letters or phone calls from federal administrators. Timothy File is with FEMA.
Please come back and see us, because it could be as simple as we don't have your insurance information, and that's holding up your claim.
Youngkin said another $20 million has gone to public assistance issues. That's money for infrastructure like roads to support further recovery. The total cost of the storm won't be known until next month. As for Virginia's financial ask from the federal government, Youngkin said he expects it to be big and cross multiple federal agencies. Agencies that will all need funding approved during the next Congress. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
A recent change to early voting may be helping Democrats in a series of special elections that are about to happen. Also with Virginia Public Radio, Michael Pope reports.
It's called the permanent absentee list. Since 2020, voters can ask to receive a ballot in the mail for every election. Not an application for a ballot, but the actual ballot for every election, including special elections that most voters don't pay attention to. Ben Tribbett is a Democratic consultant who says voters who don't even know a special election is happening will find out when the ballot arrives in the mail.
I did a special election a few years ago in Fairfax under these new rules, and it was different than any other special I'd ever done before, because by the time Election Day rolled around, we knew that 3,000 mail ballots had already been returned, and 2,500 of them were for us.
For now, this is a process that benefits Democrats, says former Republican delegate David Ramadan, who is now at George Mason University's Schar School.
Absolutely. The Democrats have the advantage on this in Virginia. They started the absentee registration when Republicans were still on the Trump no early voting period. The Republicans have changed that, but Democrats had few seasons on them on this.
Another new law all but eliminates party-run caucuses to select candidates, but that applies only to regularly scheduled elections, not special elections. So Democrats and Republicans will be conducting party-run nominating votes for a special election to a Loudoun State Senate seat this weekend. I'm Michael Pope.
Finally today, while the dust from this month's election settles, there's plenty to look ahead to in 2025. Jeff Shapiro, political columnist at the Richmond Times-Dispatch, joins Michael to recap the week in politics and state government.
Okay, a lot to get to this week, including fallout from the election. Everybody is wondering how Governor Glenn Youngkin is going to respond to the new administration's immigration policy and their policy about federal workers. Jeff Shapiro, I understand you were at a press conference where members of the media, members of the Virginia Press Corps, asked him about immigration policy, asked him about federal workers in the Washington, D.C. area. And I understand that he ran to the elevator without answering questions. What's going on with the governor?
The governor has been largely ducking, if not squirming, on this issue of the potential impact, adverse impact of Trump's promise to upend the federal bureaucracy and this threat of mass deportations. By Tuesday, he was prepared to say a little bit more, principally repeating a point he'd made back over the summer that if federal employees are suddenly without employment, there are opportunities in the private sector. Governor also talking about Trump economic policies and how they can strengthen the Virginia economy. Quite a contrast with what, say, Mark Warner, a former governor, the state's senior senator, is saying, as far as Warner is concerned, Virginia, a state in which 30% of its economy is tied to federal spending, direct and indirect, has a target on its back and will through the Trump administration.
So now that the election of 2024 is in the rearview mirror, the politics of 2025 have already started. I know my inbox is full of people making announcements about running for re-election. Jeff Shapiro, how are the statewide races shaping up?
Well, Jay Jones, a former delegate from Norfolk, announced, and this was fully expected, his second go for the Democratic nomination for Attorney General. And it was interesting, I think, the reaction of the current Attorney General, Republican Jason Meares. He seemed to spend a lot of time attacking Jones and his presumed opponent for the Democratic nomination, Shannon Taylor, the prosecutor here in the Richmond area out in Henrico, attacking them as soft on crime and enemies of the cops. Now, one wonders, is Meares keeping his options open? Is he going to stand for re-election as Attorney General? Or is he going to oppose Winsome Earl Sears, his running mate from 21, the lieutenant governor, for the Republican nomination in 2025? P.S., there's a state senator from the Richmond area, Glenn Sturdivant, a Republican from Chesterfield, who seems to be auditioning online for the Republican AG nomination. So many moving parts.
One thing that happened this week was a House committee met to approve constitutional amendments on abortion rights, gay marriage, voting rights. Normally, this is the kind of thing that happens during a General Assembly session. But Jeff Shapiro, were the House Democrats engaged in a little bit of amendment theater this week?
Certainly. And I suspect the Democrats would fully defend that. These three constitutional amendments will have to go through a second session of the legislature with an intervening House election. And that election would be in 2025. They won't go on the ballot, assuming they actually make it onto the ballot, until 2026. These are big issues with the Democratic base, and look for the Democrats to, legislative Democrats, that is, to milk them. Remember, all of these amendments had been proposed last year, but have been delayed a year, largely to build public support, but principally partisan support for them.
All right, that's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we've been joined by Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Talk to you next week.
Have a good weekend.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoy your Friday.